This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Second hour live in Nashville as we are here during the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. We've seen one game in the books today as Mississippi State advances, perhaps clinching a berth to the NCAA. Tennessee playing right now. Speaking of Tennessee, Grant Furking joins us. We saw you last the weekend of the Alabama game. You were pretty upbeat before the game.
That was the first one I correctly called.
You did call that one.
I got on the Slack last year. I said we were going to beat Georgia. It didn't happen. I made it another claim against Alabama.
The funniest thing that happened, and so Saturday morning we're doing our show, and Josh Heupel comes by right before we come on the air. He goes, I was standing there. He said, "How'd Grant do yesterday?" I'm like, going, "Wouldn't this guy have better things to worry about than how you did on a little show like this?" But it was pretty impressive.
No doubt. I mean, that day, from you guys being there to the game itself to the roller coaster of emotions throughout the game. I mean, I don't know if you can script a game better than that, especially with those two teams and everything that comes with it.
Let's talk about that, because we have a little time here to really dig deep. And we watch something like that, and then the next day you really see the highlights. But you lived through it. Just take us through that whole day and the emotions that everyone experienced.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those games, one of those stages that, you know, started taking place on Tuesday, you know, game day coming to town, SEC Nation coming to town. And, you know, it's a beautiful day, energy's great, and it's like you're just waiting to get to the game, and then you want to win the game. And, you know, we start out great, and we're leading big at halftime. And I'll tell you one thing, Paul. If we go and win that game by 28, it's special. You beat Alabama, they still rush the field. That game still isn't the same. Then
you had to blow the lead.
Being down, going down and scoring, then missing a field goal, and then going, you know, almost the length of the field to kick a game-winning field goal. I mean, you can't script it better than that.
So let me pick it up, because there were so many emotions. I'm trying to remember. It looked like even after Alabama had come back, Grant, they got called for a penalty that negated either a score or
the pass interference.
So they're set up to kick the field goal. I don't know, what is that emotion like? You're up against Alabama, and you have to be thinking, oh my goodness.
It's tough. I mean, for a lot of us sitting there, we had been on the other side of that game so many times.
Right.
I mean, and honestly, you look at the whole season as a whole. The Florida game, they have an opportunity to go and win the game.
Right.
All of us, me, I was there for 6 years. We were on the other side of that game every single time. I was there my freshman year when we lost on a Hail Mary to Florida. You know, and so you're sitting there, you're like, here we go again, here we go again. And you pull that one out. Then you get to Alabama, and it's like they have the game-winning field goal. They miss it. And it's like, oh, well, we still got to go win the game now.
And that is the possession that will live in infamy, perhaps for Nick Saban as well as for you guys, because it was the most – I mean, there was virtually no time left, and it happened so fast.
None. I mean, that whole fourth quarter, from the strip sack score that they had, the interception, they got called back, pass interference, go the length of the field, miss the field goal. We have two deep passes to get in field goal range. Two tough contested catches, and then, you know,
you're a wide receiver, so you understand this better than lay people, but what were they thinking defensively?
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about what Coach Heupel's done is, I mean, that can just happen at any second.
Right.
You know, you give them so many looks throughout the game, you're playing at such fast tempo that at any point you can just strike. So for us to be in that situation, to have to play, you know, in a hurry up situation, to have to get, you know, pretty much 40, 50 yards like that, I mean, as a receiver, you know, it didn't matter if that was, you know, 20 seconds left in the fourth quarter or, you know, the first drive in the first quarter. You're thinking the same thing. Your rules are the same. So, I mean, that's a blessing that you're trained that way within that offense. But, I mean, to go out and execute it, it's easy for me to sit up here and talk about it. But to go out and execute it and then for Chase to get up there and you know, kick the field goal to win it all, I mean, what a special night.
So at that moment, Tennessee fans will remember this for a lifetime.
I'll tell you what, when Chase made that field goal, there is a quick second I just looked up in the stands and I saw 6-year-olds crying, I saw 16-year-olds crying, and I saw 60-year-olds crying. I mean that game
looking
means
at me,
so
I'm the
much.
60-year-old.
Exactly, right. But that game just means so much to so many people across the state of Tennessee, across the conference, that, I mean, the roller coaster of emotions for it to end that way. And like I already said, being on the wrong side of it so many times, just a special, special night. I mean, you can go through 10 lifetimes and never get a game like that. You know, the setup, the pageantry around it, and then the end result is, as a Vols fan, I mean, how special is that?
In terms of just, you know, you finally get off the field, you go into that locker room. I mean, we've seen video of it, but
I don't think it was a 3:30 kick. I don't know if I left the stadium until midnight, 1.
Really?
I mean, you were just basking in the environment. You know, the field's torn up, cigars everywhere, goalposts gone, snapped. We have another game the next week. You know, and it's special. And you just want to live in those moments forever. And man, I mean, looking back at it, playing in college football for 6 years, that's what college football is all about. That's what makes Saturdays so special, is that game right there. The fans' reaction, the goalposts coming down, getting thrown in the Tennessee River. You don't get that on Sundays. You get that, you know, Saturdays in the SEC.
No, and I think sometimes people say that you have to be there, but I will say the television presentation of it was intoxicating. I mean, it was just one of the most priceless moments I think in modern college football.
I mean, I almost wish I could be in two settings at one time right there. You know, being there with
There's video available.
Yeah, being with the fans, seeing the fireworks go off, and then actually being on the field, you know, with the fan. I mean, that's the first time I've ever been a part of a field storming. You know,
what was unreal. When you were down there and fans were going crazy. I know it's the moment you want to last forever, but how did you deal with that?
And honestly, it's hard for me to even look back on it. I was just trying to soak every second in, but it was just the raw emotion you saw on those fans. I mean, their faces, you know, how they were going about. I mean, they had never been a part of that.
No.
I mean, and I'm not talking about the student section hadn't been a part of it. I mean, you had mothers and fathers out there that had never been a part of something like that.
No, I think I told you once, whatever year I started writing for the school paper, I was interviewing a guy in the locker room. He was a senior, a good player, too. He was crying. I mean, this big offensive lineman. And I asked him, I was cynical. It's like 4 straight lost to Alabama. I mean, by now you ought to get it. He said, I'll have to tell my children and grandchildren I never could beat Alabama. I mean,
that's it.
Other players have had that feeling.
Absolutely. And, you know, just to be able, and I keep going back to that game, but to talk in a sense like that, but then to be able to say I was a part of this game, you know, this win. When Tennessee got back on Alabama, it was in that fashion. Like, that's just special. It was a home game. It was, you're undefeated going into it. You know, you eventually got, you know, to be ranked number one shortly after. I mean, all those things, you know, factored into the special season that we had. But, you know, to not only say I beat Alabama, but, you know, I beat Alabama on, you know, the third Saturday, October in 2022, that will carry a lot of weight for a long, long time.
So the season finally ends for you, your career, long career.
Very long. Very long. Very long.
You'll never have to, you know, look back and go, man, I wish I had a couple more years. I mean, you milked it, didn't you?
Used every one I could, man. All six. It was, I think it was time when, you know, we were bringing the next group of recruits in as we were getting close to the bowl game, all the early enrollees. And you know, I walked past a conversation. They're asking some kid his birth date, and he said, I don't know, it was like 19 or 2004, 2003. And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, man, it's time to get out of here. I said, holy cow. But I mean, all to say though, if I wouldn't have played this last year and used every ounce of eligibility I had, I would have been pinching myself every day. I mean, being a part of this season, and you know from going to Tennessee, what football means to that school and to those fans, and to be a part of a season like this. I mean, heck, I'm excited to be a fan next year and go into a season with such energy and, you know, restored passion. I mean, I'm pumped for that.
And I say this because obviously a lot of different fan bases are out there, but Tennessee is not unique. I mean, there are other places. I saw the emotions in 2013 at Auburn, even though Auburn had beaten Alabama a couple of years earlier. Yeah. But it was just the way it happened. But it is hard to explain to someone who is not a Tennessee fan the significance of it.
Absolutely.
It's just not a random win.
I'll tell you what, not being a Tennessee fan going into my playing career there, you knew about the traditions, right? You knew the checkerboard end zones. You knew running through the tee. You knew Peyton Manning. But to really get the true story of what a lot of those rivalries mean to fans there, and I say a lot of rivalries, you will talk to fans that equally hate Vanderbilt as much as they do Florida. You will find fans that hate Florida as much as they do Alabama, and ones that, you know, hate Georgia, you know, more than the rest. And to see that and be able to go through a season to where you knock off Alabama, you knock off Florida. I mean, that's special. And in all those games, and Coach Heupel would make a point, as he's learned the traditions of Tennessee, before every game and after every game, he would be sure to tell us as a team, because we had guys that were always on the wrong side of that game. He said, you guys do not know what this game, whatever game it would be, means to the people and to the state of Tennessee any given Saturday. But especially those teams I just outlined, those opponents on those Saturdays mean a lot and carry a lot to the people of the state.
We'll talk more with Grant Furking about his career, what's next, as we are live at the SEC basketball tournament in Nashville.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Grant Freaking with us here in Nashville, and it is always a pleasure to talk to him. We talked about the Alabama game. Let's talk a little bit more about where you are in your life. You've spent 6 years. I'm not laughing at that because I would have spent 10. But what are you doing now?
Yeah, so spent, 6 years in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I went 3 hours west, and here I am in Nashville. So I'm right here in good old Mid-State and, rolling with On3 and loving every bit of it.
And as you look back now, everything looks different after you leave. But yeah. Well, let's talk about Heupel for a moment, because, you were one of the first people. I remember sitting with you on the Hill. Josh Heupel's first year, nobody knew what he was up to.
Yeah.
And you said, no, this guy is different than anything I've ever seen. Tell us about Josh Heupel and what makes him unique.
Still to this day, I'll just say that he is so different and uniquely different in every way. How he approaches running his program, how he approaches, implementing his offense, to how he handles just being a head coach in the SEC in dealing with everything that comes with that. He is the most personable, friendly, yet disciplined head coach. And I've played for three, right? Which is unique to say.
I'm sure that's not a record, but it seems like it ought to be.
It's got to be up there. I tell him, I was on the phone with him last week. I said, I miss being around you in the program. And I could tell you how the dozens of players that have played with me have been a teammate of mine that were counting down the days to get out at some other point in their career.
Nobody wants to dig up old history, although there are a lot of people who are digging up old history right now with Tennessee and what preceded Heupel, but how do you compare and contrast him to your run-of-the-mill football coach that we all know?
I think it's his genuine love. And this is very much probably people would think coach speak, but I speak from it genuinely of someone who's played for him and played for other people. He cares about his players deeply. And one thing that he is very intentional of is paying attention to every single detail of his program. He's not a micromanager, but he wants every facet of his program to be run at a high, high standard. And when it's not, a lot of coaches say, if there's a problem, you go to this guy right here. He says, if there's ever a problem in the program, you come to me. Speak to me. Knock on my door. If I'm in there with someone, I will come out there. But if there's something that's not run well in our program, I want to deal with it. And that's a culture thing. People buy into that. People then want to be in the building. We have guys that would race to get out of the building in previous years. And then you look on a Saturday morning, in the middle of the summer or in the spring, and you have guys that are there at 10 a.m. just getting extra work, and they want to be in the building. They want to be around the coaches. They want to go up there and just sit on their position coach's couch and talk about nothing football-wise.
There are a lot of head coaches that are former players. He was a uniquely great player. What do you think it is, though, that – because I don't hear that. I talk to players all the time, publicly or even privately, and I've rarely, if ever, heard what you have done, what you have said to describe him.
I think Josh is unique because he's not coming from a coaching tree that he feels like he has to establish himself in, right? He doesn't feel like he has to be someone that he's not. He was a player in fairly recently, and he was doing it at a high level of college football. And he was a coordinator. Then he was a head coach at a G5 school, a well-respected G5 school. And then he gets a Tennessee job. And the person that was at Tennessee before is a Saban guy.
Sure.
And you can look at coaches across the country, who they worked for last, and that coach probably had a ton of success there, and they wanted to model that program after them.
Right.
Josh Heupel's unique because he wants to write his own script. And he wants his legacy there to be a Josh Heupel legacy, not in an egoistic way, but he wants to own it and do it his own way. And Paul, going into last year, did you think in 2 years we would be where we're at?
No.
And with a few exceptions, we had the same roster, same talent as the year before. And that's a culture, that's a buy-in, it's a development thing.
In terms of just, you know, we're talking about off the field issues, but on Saturday, what separates him?
I think it's his ability to control the game and have total control of the team. And I'm not saying there are other coaches that are out of control, but he is calm. He's collected. I mean, you look back and just watch him during the final minutes of the Alabama game, managing the game. And I'm sure he would go back and say he made mistakes all over the place. If you just watch him, he is under control. He manages the game. And honestly, I mean, you know how those things go. When the guy in charge panics, everyone else does. It's a contagious thing. And he's just
interested in that, Grant, because, I mean, there are some very, very successful but very emotional, volatile coaches. We see it if we're watching on television. What are players watching? Do you watch the head coach during the game?
Absolutely. I mean, you just think about in the course of a game on the sideline, you know, your coach, when he's walking past, that's your main focal point.
Right.
And but I wouldn't just say it's a game day thing, Paul. I mean, we see our head coach when everyone else doesn't. You know, we see him on the practice field. We see him in the meeting room. We see him, you know, in our individual meeting rooms when he's coming through. We see him at team dinners, at breakfast, at lunch. And the one thing that Josh Heupel isn't is he's not someone that's different in all those situations.
Right.
He's not different when other people are around. He is him 24/7. And to a lot of guys, that carries a lot of weight. That's a trust thing. And, you know, it is beyond impressive to me for someone that has played with him and now is on the other side of it. As I've watched him, I continue to talk to guys of his just continued trek and journey at Tennessee and just all the things he's doing right. He, like I said, he's not trying to be someone. He took that job in probably, you know, the wildest days of college football, right when NIL happened. Transfer portal rules all over the place. And you're at Tennessee, who has had every bad headline,
sure,
and everything negative.
I mean, that's the most.
Walked into it and just navigated it.
And we're seeing it now, all this unfold.
Right.
I think that's what makes. I mean, if he had, coaches get fired every day, but he inherited about one of the worst situations I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
You were there, and you lived it.
And you just think, in 2 years, going from what he walked into 2 Januaries ago to where we are now, talking about a legitimate East contender, they should win the East, all the things, all the headlines, you know, had a legit shot to walk into the playoff this year. Every headline you think of, I mean, 2 years ago, you would not find one positive word about that football program. And he didn't panic. And I think that's just what's so unique about him. Being in that position, the pressure, the Tennessee fan base, all those things, clear eyes, sailed right through it.
Let me ask you about NIL before we run out of time here, because from the inside out, you saw it, you participated. Give us the player's view of NIL.
You know, I've stood firm on this since I was on your set July 1st, 2021, and I told you it was going to be a great thing for college sports, and I would never second-guess that one day in my life. The opportunities that I continue to see it, play out and create for teammates of mine, for other, you know, players across college football, is really special. And I think, you know, sometimes people still get carried away with the headlines and they see the, you know, the situations that some of these players walk into that, you know, are pretty negative things. One thing that, you know, I'm so passionate about, and I've talked to you about this many times, is, you know, I just want to educate these kids and their families and help them avoid these situations that put them in a really bad spot. Because as great as it is, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, walking these kids into a lot of dangerous situations. I mean, at the end of the day, these are 17, 18, 19-year-old kids that are going into these situations that have no experience about it.
Nick Saban said the other day that instead of choosing a school for the reasons people used to choose them, they're now simply doing it for money. Is it really just about money, or is there more to it? I'm not talking about your case, but I'm talking about the top players.
You know, the funny thing about that is and I don't think you are, and I don't think anyone that really knows college football is arrogant enough to think that players weren't doing that for many years before NIL.
Of course they were.
You know, And, you know, of course, now it's a lot more public. And so, you know, to the general population, it probably seems like that. But one thing I will tell you is it's always great to get a paycheck and have a nice paycheck. At the end of the day, you want to be happy to what you're walking into. And if these players are getting huge sums of money, but they aren't happy with their position coach, they're not happy in the locker room, their teammates, you know, don't want to be a teammate with them, they're not going to end up there. And I think you've seen that across the country. Paul, I told you this on July 1, that everything in this ecosystem would work itself out. Just like in business and in you know, in econ, it always works itself out.
Do players know, maybe recruits know, I should say, the coaches that really embrace it or just mouth the words?
Absolutely. I mean, you see coaches take wildly different approaches to the era. And some not just are that open about it to the team, you got coaches that are wildly open about it to the public.
Right.
And I'm not talking about coaches, ADs. That's equally as important. If you have an AD that's not fully bought into NIL, the head coach isn't going to be fully bought into NIL. And that's just hierarchy right there. And, you know, I think players are quickly going to realize who is and who isn't bought in. At the end of the day, if you have two schools that are, you know, equal in a recruitment and one's fully bought in and one's all the way back here, that's going to make a difference. I mean, at the end of the day, if all things are equal, you're going to go somewhere that's paying you more money. If all things are equal, I mean, you're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, right? A lot of times, I mean, the parents going to have some involvement in that too.
It does seem, I mean, things change, but it just seems like we're not seeing a dramatic paradigm shift, though. I mean, Tennessee returned to its roots, but this year in recruiting, it was Alabama, Georgia.
It was. But you analyze college football deeply. How many teams have you seen resurrect, in a sense, that they've been able to get on a level playing field as your Alabamas and your Georgias and the teams that you've always seen right there at the top?
Finally,
that's absolutely happened.
Because I think Tennessee fans and fans of college football want this question answered. You know, we think these things are forever. They're not. When you've seen as much as I have, you know that. But right now, it just does seem like we're living in a Alabama, Georgia world. Where do you think Tennessee fits into that? And how does Tennessee, forgetting everything we watched this year, number one in the country in beating, how do they move into that rarefied air and stay there?
Yeah, I think it is easier for us at Tennessee to get to the top at this point than it is for schools like Alabama and Georgia to sustain where
really?
They've been.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because and just all the NIL workings and everything that's playing into it, you have a hungry Tennessee fan base that saw NIL and saw what it can truly do to propel a team into the national spotlight. So they want to sustain that. I mean, they want to give at every turn to the collective, to the university, anything to keep a winning team out there. Because they've now seen what their dollars can directly do in 1 year. Alabama, Georgia, they've been doing that for years. But to their fans, I mean, it's just another day for them. So to see a fan base that truly sees the true effect of what NIL can do to help a team, and that's not all NIL. I mean, we have our coaches, Coach Heupel, you know, what he's implemented on the offensive side of the football, what Coach Banks has done on the defense side, all those things factor into it. But in the general ecosystem of college sports, to see what NIL has done at Tennessee to put them in the same conversation as the Alabamas and the Georgias, I mean.
Can anyone, is it, how tough is it to break into that upper echelon, though?
It's hard, man. I mean, it's hard. And look at that team out there in Texas this year in our conference. Money doesn't buy everything, Paul. Money does not buy everything. And I'm not up here saying that it does. But there's a lot of other factors that play into it, but I'll tell you one thing. When there's cohesion within an athletic department, a football program, and a university as a whole, a lot of good things happen. And from Chancellor Plowman to Danny White to Josh Heupel to our collective and all the parties pushing forward, this is the most stable Rocky Top has ever been. And look at the conversations we've been having.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, as we wrap up, and I think we have shattered the time codes on the show because this has been so interesting to me and the audience. Grant, thank you. You're always welcome here. So good to see you.
As always. Love it.
Grant Furking joining us. We're live in Nashville as we continue with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flail.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And we are back at Nashville. We're halftime of Tennessee and Ole Miss. Tennessee with a slight lead. Mississippi State winning the early game, probably, almost definitely locking in a bid to the tournament, whether they are in a play-in or inside the field. We don't know. We're just talk show hosts. Adam Cole joining us from it covers Auburn for the OA News and the AU blog. Adam, good to see you. Thanks for making your way to the booth here. We had Bruce Pearl on yesterday. He was Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's exciting to be here. I really appreciate you guys having me on, especially at, you know, what's really just kind of an interesting juncture for Auburn men's basketball.
Let's talk about it, because it seemed like yesterday, although I think it's 4 years that Auburn was in the Final Four, you were still a student. Mm-hmm. By the way, what was that like to be a student when your team goes to the Final Four?
Oh, well, I wasn't at Auburn.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
No, I went to the University of Missouri.
Well, then I know what it's like not to go to the Final Four.
Yeah, there you go. Ain't that the truth? But, no, I definitely – it's funny because I remember when I got here, I very much remember – that game and coming down to the last possession, and it's definitely been interesting to step in this year and just kind of see what's I guess been built here at Auburn and of course what wasn't here before Bruce Pearl got there.
Were you in the J school at Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
I asked that question because it is I've worked for a number of Missouri graduates who in my early days in the newspaper, and They always told me it was the best J school in the country.
That's the moniker it gets. It was a lot of fun too, and it's been crazy, especially just only a couple of years out, just seeing so many faces around and about.
We were out there 1 year for SEC Nation, and I was invited to go speak. And I will tell you, I've spoken a couple of places in my career. I was fairly intimidated going there with the best and the brightest, because you just don't show up in Columbia and check the box and say you're going. You have to be admitted.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, that was a rigorous process. I think that was actually my freshman year. I remember covering you guys coming out for the student radio station, actually, so definitely small world. And
I should have remembered you then.
Yeah.
So back to Auburn, what's it like to cover Bruce Pearl?
He's great. He's phenomenal to work with. And I don't speak from a lot of experience, but he's probably been one of the best coaches I've been able to cover in terms of just accessibility and just kind of what he lets you into. The group that he's got, he's fun, but they're fun too. A lot of personality. And I think we kind of saw that yesterday. This group coming out and they're dancing at shoot around, and you've got, Katie Johnson stealing Jani Broome's chain during media availability yesterday, and then Jani walks out and he's got Katie Johnson's chain on. I think it's a fun environment, and I think it's certainly, infectious and starts at the coach.
We'll obviously follow and see what happens tonight with Auburn. They're in the field, of course. Their season was on the brink until they beat Tennessee the other day. Let me get to football for a second, Adam, because the Hugh Freeze story was one of the bigger stories of the offseason. He's a polarizing figure, but having said all that, it, from a distance, and I haven't been to Auburn since he was hired, it seems like it's really going over well.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that I think has been kind of in the back of the head as he started out is the bar was pretty low coming in, but he's more than exceeded it. I would say to this point, what he did with recruiting was really impressive, and there was a sense of urgency to it, and you're seeing that, I think, already with spring practices. You know, I think the first team, if not one of the first in the SEC to start spring practices, and he's talked about it too. He's like, we feel like we have to hit the ground running, get this thing going, get everything installed, and it's been a hot start, a fast start, and it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes throughout the rest of the spring for sure.
The question I keep getting is the quarterback room. What's it look like, and what do you think is going to happen?
A shocking amount of just not a lot of change, you know, which I think is something that nobody was really expecting coming to this point. You figure they would have dipped into the portal, got one guy at least, and they didn't get anybody, entertained a few names, and now you've got kind of all the same suspects from last year. And at this point, I think Robbie Ashford's the clear favorite. You know, he came in and he maintained that starting job last year under circumstances of, you know, you have a head coach get fired. You've got an offensive line that's beat up, banged up, and you're facing pressure left and right. And he played through a lot of injury. He talked about that after the Iron Bowl. But you got to see improvement from him, I think, this spring. The numbers on the ground looked great, but through the air, I think if I'm right, he was one of the...
How do you think he fits Freeze's system? Because Freeze is such a respected offensive coach.
I think he fits it really well. I think he fits it a lot better than what, Brian Harsin kind of had there. And you know, it's a passing game that, you know, Phil Montgomery, the offensive coordinator, talked about it earlier this spring. But just, you know, they want to spread people out and they attack deep. In the passing game, and I think that's really big. And he's had some dual threat quarterbacks too, who in the past, have had some success. Malik Willis, former Auburn quarterback, you know, had a lot of success under him at Liberty. And I think Robbie's the same mold. It's just a matter of, you know, how much will they be able to mold him, especially in the spring, because, you know, if he's looking great going out of it, I think that you wonder whether or not they'd go into the portal, but you almost lean more likely that they may not if they're feeling really confident in Robbie. So it's going to be a really big spring for that quarterback room, but for Robbie.
I realize you don't know who's going to be in the portal, but is there a sense that is there someone you think Hugh Freeze is looking around for or waiting for?
That's a good question. I don't know that I have my finger on that pulse per se, but
I'm always looking for that doomsday scenario.
Yeah, no, I
didn't go to Missouri.
It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out if they find themselves in a place where they feel like they need to dip into the portal and get somebody, especially because, I mean, it'd be such short notice to bring a guy in feeling like you don't have your quarterback one and you got to get this guy ready by fall. So,
yeah, I know. I mean, I keep hearing that, but you're right. Nowadays, it's so different than it was years ago, but you better be there on January 1st.
Right.
You really ought to be. You almost need to be there for, the players come in now, for the bowl practice?
Basically. I mean, yeah. You can come in pretty early. I know they've got a lot of guys who, even high school guys who graduated early coming in for spring practices now. But you look at this situation in particular, and I think it's one where you're right. You really do need to be there from the get-go because everybody's learning a new offense. Hugh Freeze has talked about it. Him and Montgomery are trying to mold – sort of their philosophies into one. There's a lot of similarities to it, but you've got to figure out the fine tuning of it all. I think for this situation in particular, you want a guy who's going to have been there for a while, so to speak.
I know predictions are worthless. I'm predicting right now Auburn beats UMass in the opener, but overall, it seems like a manageable schedule. I don't know what to make out of that trip to Berkeley, although.
Yeah.
I'd like to go on it. It's really a cool town if you've never been. But what do you think? I mean, what is there a number that Auburn fans are looking at?
Um, I you know, I don't know about a number. I'm sure a lot of Auburn fans are looking for numbers 9, 10, particular in the way it wins. But that's,
let me ask realistic people.
Realistic,
then.
Right. I think this is a group that, especially with how much he was able to bring in on both sides of the line of scrimmage in particular, you had 21 new transfers.
Yeah, for those who don't know, at California, the schedule, at A&M on the 23rd, that's a critical moment. Georgia, LSU, it's a really tough beginning. You got three straight games there, and you have, you know, at Vanderbilt, not Arkansas. To me, that is a manageable second half of the season. Not to be disparaging here in Nashville, just up the street from Vanderbilt, but when you have Vanderbilt from the other side, it's an advantage. Hey, thank you so much for coming by.
No, of course. Thank you so much for having
me on.
Great
to check in with Adam Cole, who covers Auburn. We are live in Nashville, and we're coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.